always streaming on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Brief. South Korea's president now says martial law will be lifted and troops withdrawn just hours after his shock declaration. CBS News security contributor Sam Vinograd.
This declaration of martial law caught analysts by surprise, caught the White House by surprise.
The U.S. has 28,000 troops in South Korea. A Chinese national living in California on an expired visa has been arrested and charged with supplying North Korea with military and electronic equipment. U.S. Attorney Martin Estrada.
The North Korean officials sent Mr. Wen at least $2 million to pay for obtaining these materials and also to pay for the shipping costs.
Adobe's Vivek Pandia has been tallying the numbers from Cyber Monday.
We saw $13.3 billion spent online on Cyber Monday, and that was up about 7.3% year on year.
Cyber Week brought in $41 billion online. CBS News Brief, I'm Cammy McCormick.
Seth here, host of Over the Back Fence. We're on the air live every Saturday from 11 a.m. to 12 p.m., taking your calls to buy or sell, talk local events, or whatever, only on WFHR.
For WFHR and WIRA News, I'm Melissa Kay. We have more information about that pizza shop in southwestern Wisconsin where people were given food that contained THC. More people got sick than previously thought. Here's Savannah Tome Olson.
An update on that bizarre story where people were accidentally given pizza laced with THC. It happened back in October in Stoughton. Turns out a staff member from Famous Yeti's Pizza was cooking in a shared industrial kitchen where people have their own separate kitchen rooms. When they ran out of cooking oil, they went searching for some from one of their neighbors. They grabbed what they thought was cooking oil, but was clearly labeled THC oil. They just didn't see that label. The oil was completely legal, by the way. All this is according to Public Health Madison, Dane County. Officials said they started to put together what happened when someone who had to go to the hospital said it felt like they'd eaten an edible. A new report from health officials says at least 85 people had symptoms and more than 30 had to seek medical attention. At first, they thought it only affected pizza, but now they know the THC made it into sandwiches and cheese bread, too.
Three Wisconsinites have contracted salmonella from cucumbers sold in the Badger State. With more, here's Derek Tritz.
65 other people have been infected across 18 other states, according to the CDC. The cucumbers can be traced back to a company named SunFed Produce and were shipped to 26 states, including Wisconsin, between October 12th and November 26th, according to the FDA. The Wisconsin DHS, alongside other state and federal partners, are currently investigating further into this multi-state outbreak. While the cucumbers have been recalled, the DHS recommends Wisconsinites to check their home for contaminated cucumbers. These can be identified by a SunFed sticker on individual cucumbers.
If you are unsure whether cucumbers you bought are part of the recall, the DHS recommends contacting the store you purchased them from. I'm Melissa Kay for WFHR and WIRI News.
The Bucks are on the road. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. It's the Bucks and the Pistons tonight in Detroit, an NBA Cup game, the in-season tournament. Doc Rivers thinks this could be a fun game to watch.
It's early in the season, and you have a game that has some meaning behind it. The team that you're playing, it's a must-win for them. You know, it's a must-win for both teams in some ways. You don't get this early. And so I think it's good for everybody.
College hoops, Wisconsin hosts Michigan tonight in Madison. The Badgers now ranked 11th in the nation in the latest AP poll. NFL Packers getting ready for the Lions. Green Bay defensive end Lucas Van Ness has a quarterback sack in each of the Packers' last two games. I asked him about Lions quarterback Jared Goff.
Yeah, you know, you've seen that he's a very efficient passer, and we're going to do what we can just to kind of keep the momentum we've had over the past few weeks, getting after quarterbacks and trying to do our best to impact the game that way.
That's the Packers' Lucas Van Ness with sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
Mostly cloudy today and a bit breezy, with winds out of the southwest gusting to around 25 miles per hour and high temperatures reaching the upper 20s. Tonight, we only fall a few degrees to the low 20s, and tomorrow, temperatures crash. It'll be blustery and cold with scattered snow showers. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot. Currently, it's 28 degrees.
Are you prepared for an emergency or disaster? Because it's not a matter of if, but when. Don't find yourself saying,
when the storm rolls in, my time to find a pet-friendly evacuation center will have run out.
The scorching heat wave will leave me powerless to cool my insulin. I'll face a hurricane without meds. Now that's a tough pill to swallow.
Let's prepare so we all have a better story to tell. Get started at ready.gov/olderadults. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
The Todd Alba Show.
Peter Rapine, the managing editor of E-Bombs World.
Another dumb paid millions for a duct-taped banana. You don't get to take home the banana. You're just taking the concept of it.
They sold this for $6.2 million. The guy bought a banana for 35 cents and took a thing of duct tape and put it on a white wall.
It's art, baby.
The Todd Alba Show, weekdays noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Jane Matinere and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, will prices of things we eat be going up? We talk to Darren Von Ruden coming up tomorrow at 11:06. We'll wrap it up with This Shouldn't Be a Thing. Join us.
Matinere on air, weekday mornings at 10.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR, Rapids' home of Nightlight with Peach Wabba.
Nobody does talk radio like Civic Media. So glad y'all are here. We got Cardi behind the board. Give us a call. Everybody's wanted to talk about Act 10, the Act 10 decision, unions. What is collective bargaining? Why does it matter? Can we have discussions about where unions might fall a little short? Because I think these are actually really complicated, fascinating issues. Let's continue to talk about this. Y'all have had a ton of comments. I know, Mark, you were on the horn. I think we had somebody else. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. I never want to shut it down when we are having one of our patented great conversations. So please, let's re-engage. This is something that, again, I have had a front row seat to, which is the impact of Act 10. Both as a frontline employee, I was in the municipal lawyers union at the city of Milwaukee when I first joined because I was just a frontline staffer. I eventually ended up running the city of Milwaukee's 401k styled plan and putting in some major changes there. And employees didn't trust us because they had just watched their paychecks get cut effectively by somewhere. Sometimes over 10%, depending, based on Act 10, lots of distrust. And I ended up in management at Milwaukee County. So I've seen this from all sides. And at Milwaukee County, as a manager, as the leader of our law department, I worked with HR in negotiating with our public safety unions. I know what that looks like. I know what the process feels like. I know where the pitfalls are. I know how the lawyers act that represent unions. So I am here for all of your comments and discussions. This is one of those where I think like the party lines, both from conservatives and from liberals on this, don't quite get it done. Okay. And so in full disclosure, I'm going to try to take every single call and every single text I'm going to give some voice to so that we can actually have this discussion. I think it's an incredibly important one. And I'm going to just start right out of the box by giving you what my take is on, I'm going to keep it narrow to public sector unions, but some of the commentary can extend into private sector unions. Here's the fundamental point for me. I have always thought that Act 10 is unconstitutional. When you strip away frontline employees' rights to get together and fight for better working conditions, better pay, and higher benefits, that is a violation of our constitutionally protected right to assemble. That's what that is about. If you want to talk about being a Christian, well, one of the best known Christians out there, or groups of Christians, is the Catholic Church. The Catholic Church for centuries has talked about the dignity and necessity for the full expression of human dignity to be able to organize as labor. Okay? That is fundamental. I will always support the right of workers to organize. Here's where it gets a little complicated. I want unions to actually represent all of their membership. I want unions to be aware of how politically
labor is being represented. And by that, I mean not who is their elected representatives, but does the labor union or the union movement continue to have, or does it need to regrow, the faith of the general public, as well as its youngest union membership? My experience has been that unions are really great at advocating for their very senior and top level employees. I wonder why that is. But they don't do so well advocating for and advancing their interests of their most junior employees. I also think that compensation that is only tenure-based is problematic. Should tenure be a part of compensation decisions? You bet. But should compensation and bonuses also be based on effectiveness, efficiency, attitude, all those kinds of things? Yes. Unions have not traditionally been really good at talking about that, right? These are the sorts of things that provide attack opportunities for those that want to degrade the ability of working people to organize, which is fundamentally anti-American and anti-democratic small d. Now, I'll add this to the mix, and then I'd love to hear more from you all. 855-75-CIVIC, that's 855-752-4842. Unlike the private sector, in the public sector, what is the government's response to unreasonable union demands? Well, they can say no, and they go through these long, protracted negotiations. But is the government ever going to lock out its employees? When's the last time you heard of a public employee union going on strike? I can't think of one. I point these things out because the very nature of public service is different from the private sector in some way, shape, or form. All public service employees are providing some kind of essential service. So you can't lock your employees out. It's unlikely your employees are going to strike, though they were used to retain those rights. So what happens? So public employee unions aren't on exactly the same footing as private sector unions. There's different issues at play, or at least more complicated issues. And I'm going to tell you what my biggest criticism of unions are, or my the biggest criticism of unions is, and there's one. Why do you always blindly defend the obviously and evidently incompetent employee? Why? It destroys your credibility as organized labor. Can unions better police their own ranks, push out those underperformers, push out the evident racists from your police unions and from your force, push out the crazies, push out the freeloaders, push out the ones that make all of the rest of us who work so hard look bad, who destroy our credibility, whether you work on a police force, a fire department, or you're an accountant for a governmental jurisdiction? That is one of the things that I think folks that aren't in unions will raise. And I think the amount of money that unions pay to labor lawyers, the attorneys that they hire to fight every single thing to the nth degree every time, is unconscionable. Unions should be taking a hard look at whether or not those labor lawyers are actually returning value for the hundreds of thousands and millions of dollars that they get paid. I've negotiated and litigated with many of them, and I'll tell you this, it's a volume operation, y'all. I'm not a huge fan. Not a huge fan. Now let's take some texts, and we're going to go to the phone lines, 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Andy from Wausau, whom I often have a spirited discussion with on the text line, is pointing out that governmental jurisdictions should, quote, negotiate better. Here's the trick with that, Andy. And he also follows up and says this: companies hire powerful lawyers. This is sort of the point here. Hire powerful lawyers during negotiations to get offers low to most factory employees. Cities and counties can do the same. No, not really. Okay, just more on that in a second. Weak negotiating skills result in lopsided contracts. I've sat in many contract negotiations, mainly on the union side. We always ask for the highest expectations, then both sides negotiate a fair proposal. One of the reasons that I think you saw sort of benefit creep in public sector unions is that the mechanisms by which employees are disciplined and terminated are just very different. For example, in Milwaukee County, civil service employees, this has nothing to do with unions, nothing at all. Civil service employees have a presumed property right in their job. So like any disciplinary proceeding, you can challenge as an employee and then there's a hearing about it. And so what that means is that it's not the same as the private sector, right? And you, there are certain mechanisms that are beyond the reach of bargaining in government. That's why it's not always exactly analogous to private sector unions. In other words, this stuff is really complicated. That was some comments from Andy. Let's see here. Andrew from Maine, side note, not Act 10. Oh, he loves my t-shirt today. It's such a simple, obvious message. Yes, my t-shirt, if you are not watching on the U of the Tube or the X or the face of the books, says trust Democratic women. I am a Democratic woman. I hope you trust me. Thank you, Andrew. Wes from Middleton says, per the Walker Voss School of Thought, Dr. Ben and those out in the streets answering the crisis lines at work for governments, connecting people to resources are not public safety. I'm excited to see them attempt to explain that in court. This is one of the issues with Act 10. When you think about public safety employees, conservation wardens carry guns. All kinds of folks carry guns and enforce laws, but they weren't included in the definition of public safety. And by the way, at the end of the day, what do all governmental employees try to do? Increase public health, safety, and wellness. So why isn't it all public safety? In other words, who got to bargain about what could not be rationally explained? And by the way, one of the biggest rationales could have been cost savings, but they couldn't make that argument because the largest drivers of costs, especially in the city of Milwaukee, were police and fire benefits and pensions. So they could never say that. That's why when they go, oh, it's about the cost savings now, is a bunch of hooey, okay? That is just bogus. It was raw political calculation. Let me keep going down the text line. Dave from Waukesha. It's hard to want to carry the torch of advocacy post-election. Even before the election, it felt like wind was knocked out of my sails. I stopped listening to talk radio for a while because of how I was feeling. I worked hard as an advocate against MAGA school board, BS in Waukesha for the last few years, and the LGBTQ hate parade. Now I feel somewhat rudderless, like it's all for naught. Wondering if there is a segment of folks out there who are feeling the same. I do sometimes too, Dave, but I will say this. The very fact that we're having this discussion about Act 10, that there is this lawsuit that's going on, get involved in your local and state government. Pay attention to these elections because these matter a whole lot. We may not be able to do much on the federal level for the next 4 years, though keep an eye on the House of Representatives. Right? Like, holy cow, keep an eye there. That might be a 1 or 2 seat margin, so it's not going to take much. But local and state government, especially that Supreme Court election in April, keeping me motivated. We're going to come back, finish this discussion up, y'all. I'm going to go to the phones and back to the text lines next. 855-75-CIVIC. That's 855-752-4842. I'm Maggie Dawn. Keep it locked, y'all. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR.
Do you catch yourself quoting TV shows like that? It could win you a free meal and make you our next star of the day with Culver's. Join the morning show on WFHR every Friday.
What you talking about, Willis?
My name's James, and I'm telling people every Friday we'll play a theme song or a quote from a movie.
Frankly, my dear, I don't give a...
You call 424-2600, give the correct answer, and you'll win a family pack from our Wisconsin Rapids Culver's.
To the Batmobile!
Join the morning show every Friday for Culver's Star of the Day.
I love it when a plan comes together.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. As Democrats pick up the pieces from their loss to Donald Trump, one of the first major decisions the party will be making is to select the new chair of the Democratic National Committee. The race for that role now has a major Wisconsin connection. Ben Wickler, the chair of the Democratic Party of Wisconsin, is now officially running for DNC chair. One Democratic source I talked to characterized Wickler as a Goldilocks candidate for the role. He's liked by both centrists and progressives, big dollar donors and grassroots organizers, and knows how important state parties around the country can be in a second Trump term. So, could he be just right for the role? The vote for DNC chair is scheduled for February 1st. A lot can happen between now and then. But whether or not Wickler wins in his bid for the role, it will certainly be a story to watch for Democratic politics in Wisconsin.
Find all of Dan's work at the Recombobulation Area and on our website at civicmedia.us. This Giving Tuesday, Civic Media invites you to make a difference. Help a neighbor, volunteer with a local organization, or support a Wisconsin nonprofit with a donation. Giving back starts right here in your community. Learn how you can make an impact today. Visit civicmedia.us. Civic Media, proud to support Giving Tuesday and the spirit of giving throughout Wisconsin. This is locally grown radio, WFHR.
Everybody, a lively discussion underway right here on the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network about public employee unions. I want to thank all of the folks on the text and call lines, including a little shout out to Chad that is listening or watching, I should say, on the U of the Tube. Chad pointing out that there are unions that have their own internal disciplinary boards. Yep. Here's what I know from working at the city and the county. I am unaware of a union internal disciplinary board that the Milwaukee Police Department has. I don't think one of those exists. They have internal affairs, but that is considered employer action. And what IA can do or not do gets litigated. It gets bargained. Okay, so it's subject to bargaining. So that wasn't, I wasn't saying that some unions don't have internal disciplinary proceedings and that employees aren't brought up for discipline. That happens. The reality, and what I'll tell you I have seen firsthand at the city of Milwaukee and Milwaukee County, is that when employee discipline occurs, suspension, suspension without pay, termination, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, the union always defends the employee. Even some of the most indefensible employees that you can imagine. Oftentimes, when there has been a police-involved shooting, the first person that will show up on scene, that will go in front of the cameras, is a union rep. Okay? Facts. So I'm not saying that like we can paint with a broad brush. But when it comes to public unions, there are some complexities here. They do not stand on all fours with the private sector union. I think, you know, again, the pension scandal in Milwaukee County laid the groundwork for Act 10. But it has had many negative unintended consequences. And my meta argument is, I think the constitutional underpinnings of Act 10 are completely specious. The idea that you can strip bargaining rights away from groups of employees, for some employees but not others, based on completely arbitrary characteristics, is totally false. Let's go to the phone lines. Thanks, everybody, for your patience. Mark from Prairie du Sac, you say what, sir?
Yeah, thank you. And I was a state employee, and I was, you know, in my union. I actually was a union steward and, you know, did some representation in one case. I had to make a phone call to our human resources department because a bureau director had made the comment that he hoped no other women got pregnant in this section because one had to go out on maternity leave, and he was feeling pressed as what staffing levels were. And the woman who contacted me actually was pregnant at the time, and she was wondering how that was going to impact her career. So that the guy was kind of something else. But I mean, that for the getting back to the pension thing, for state employees, of course, when Act 10 rolled through, that Scott Walker rolled back, you know, at the compensation you know, by taking, you know, by making employees pay more for their pension than they had been, because that was something inserted into the entire, the whole compensation package back in the 80s when the government could not afford to give the state employees any raises that year. They said,
yes,
we'll contribute your portion toward the pension. And that was built into our salaries.
This is a huge point, Mark. And that is that salary increases weren't given in exchange for greater benefits. And so when Act 10 happened, this is how you ended up with these gross inequities. People in the same exact positions with the same job duties with wildly different compensation levels that had nothing to do with their skill, efficiency, or effectiveness. That, to me, is how you undermine public confidence in government. That's how you disincentivize people from committing their entire lives to public service. It's how you disincentivize people entering public service. When people perceive their compensation and the way that compensation decisions are being made to be unfair, they will either, frankly, unethically and illegally go get theirs anyways, or they simply will duck out. Peggy from Brooklyn, what's up?
Yes, I was a state employee also. Yes, 1 year before Scott Walker, I got 6 raises in 1 month.
Mm.
And they actually totaled about $15 an hour because I was one of the senior techs that hadn't had a raise, and I was at the max of what I could get. But they were hiring youngsters coming in brand new at what I was making.
Yep.
So they made compensations, and then when Scott Walker came in and he rolled everything back,
yep,
I switched from the state to the feds because the feds would pay me what I was making, and Scott Walker wanted to take all that away.
Yeah, Peggy, you make such a critical point. I hear this again and again and again. Because of the history of how benefits and salaries were and wages were bargained for public employee unions, once Act 10 stripped away all these rights, oftentimes you had people coming into positions negotiating for higher wages than their contemporary. It just, again, it led to incredible inequities all across the spectrum. What I will tell you is this. There is incredible pay compression in some of the most important government jobs. What's pay compression? Where, like, within a tiny band, you have people of all kinds of experience, expertise, seniority, and effectiveness levels. That isn't good. When you're trying to compensate people within these tiny little bands, it is really hard to keep your super performers and keep them motivated. And it's really hard to create disincentives for underperformance. I'll tell you that as a manager, it was very difficult. One of my main jobs every year when I was at Milwaukee County was to make sure that I was getting salary increases for my super performers. That was how I created an incentive structure where the underperformers eventually got the message, like, you're not going to see that extra money. And I moved away from purely tenure-based compensation systems, because that, to me, in my opinion and experience, doesn't create the best incentives. We got to take a quick break. I got one more caller on the lines. Peggy, if you had some other thoughts, I'll go back to you after this very quick break. We're going to come right back, finish up this discussion, and then we'll get into, how the heck is MAGA going to judge whether or not Donald Trump is effective? And if they can't really do that, what does that open the door to in terms of corruption and incompetence within government? Keep it locked, y'all. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show right here on the Civic Media Radio Network, 855-75-CIVIC. Get your last thoughts in on Act 10, 855-752-4842.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR, home for the Todd Allball Show.
Thank you for listening to Maggie and the Millionaires on this Civic Media station. The patriotic millionaires are financial supporters through paid advertising on some Civic Media stations.
The holiday season approaches. Grain markets often experience a seasonal bounce, sometimes referred to as a Christmas rally. This year, corn markets are showing some positive movement, building momentum after a period of selling pressure tied to some contract deadlines around Thanksgiving. I'm Charity Seebecker for the Midwest Farm Report. And John Heimberg, market advisor with Total Farm Marketing, says while demand remains a key factor supporting prices, ample supply continues to weigh on the market.
Unfortunately, my targets aren't very high. You know, if we can get March somewhere back in that 450 window is kind of where I'm hoping we can get to, but we got a lot of work to do to get there. But that should probably provide some opportunities for producers, again, to go ahead and continue to make sales on rallies here. You know, we got a, still a heavy supply out there. The demand is good, and that's the biggest thing that's really helping, you know, turn prices off the lows since back in that August low that we placed here in the corn market. So we need to continue to see how that plays out.
That's John Heinberg, market advisor with Total Farm Marketing. I'll have a look at your closing markets right after this.
Attention farmers and ranchers. The Can-Am Ag and Business Program wants to reward hardworking folks like you. Head to your local Can-Am dealer to find out how you can get extra coverage on top of a rebate of up to $1,500 on select Can-Am Defender and Outlander models. If you've had your eyes set on a Can-Am workhorse, now's the time to get your own. Visit your local Can-Am dealer to add a true game changer to your roster. Certain conditions apply. See dealer for details.
What makes Dairyland seed corn different? The right stuff. More options to help you fight corn rootworm pests. A variety of hybrids with an advanced combination of above-ground pest control and herbicide tolerance. And a ton of other options supported by direct access to agronomy experts who will help you get the most out of the ideal seed for your Midwestern acres. The right corn for you and the right people by your side. That's the Dairyland Seed difference. Meet our 2025 lineup at DairylandSeedCorn.com.
I'm Charity Seebecker for the Midwest Farm Report with a look at your closing markets. Cash corn closed at 432 and a quarter, down a quarter. New crop corn closed at 430 and three quarters, down a penny. Cash beans closed at 991 and three quarters. That was up 6.5 cents. And new crop beans closed at 1006 and a quarter, up three quarters. Cash wheat closed at 547 and a half, up a quarter. And new crop wheat closed at 562, also up a quarter. On the dairy side of things, January Class 3 milk contract is trading at 1863 a hundredweight, up 41 cents. And February milk is trading at 1878, up 23 cents. Barrel cheese closed today at 165. That was up 4.5 cents. 40-pound block cheese closed at 167, up 3.25. And the AA butter closed up 2.75 and closed at 252 and a quarter. For the Midwest Farm Report, I'm Charity Seebecker.
James here, host of Unlabeled, your 90s mixtape, every Sunday from 8 to 9 on WFHR. It's your weekly dose of music, nostalgia, and pop culture exclusively on locally grown radio.
Mostly cloudy today and a bit breezy, with winds out of the southwest gusting to around 25 miles per hour and high temperatures reaching the upper 20s. Tonight, we only fall a few degrees to the low 20s, and tomorrow, temperatures crash. It'll be blustery and cold with scattered snow showers. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot. Currently, it's 28 degrees.
Earl Ingram.
Mr. Ben Wickler, he is running for the national DNC chair. The fundamental problem was the Democratic brand. Do you think that is the case more than the Harris campaign?
Core answer is yes. The Democratic brand, it's not what we necessarily do or say. It's what people have heard and internalized. And that to me is an argument for thinking about how and where we communicate, making sure we are present in places where people are thinking about stuff other than politics.
The Earl Ingram Show, weekday mornings 8 to 10 on your local civic media radio station and on the app. The Todd Alba Show.
Cash Patel, who Trump has nominated to be the head of the FBI, saying he wants to basically shut down the main parts of the FBI. Bill Barr, MAGA Republican Attorney General to Donald Trump. Quote, the very idea of moving Patel into a role like this showed a shocking detachment from reality. Unquote. This is not the left calling out Patel. This is the right.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local civic media radio station and on the app. Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome TV's Mike Toomey, who will discuss his 10th annual Christmas special in Southeast Wisconsin. Then Nightlight frequent flyer Frank Anderson joins the show to tell Christmas ghost stories.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 till 8.
I'm coming home, baby, now. I'm coming home now, right away. I'm coming home, baby, now.
Oh, welcome back, everybody. We're just concluding our discussion today about Act 10. And we got somebody watching on YouTube that has, I think, tried to suggest that I am attacking workers in some way. I am not. What I am suggesting is that Act 10, its implications, its costs, both direct and indirect, are more complicated than either what the Republican or Democratic talking points are. But I will leave you with these thoughts, and then I'm going to take my last caller. Thank you, sir, for your patience. Hang on one second. This is my last thought. Again, I want to frame this correctly. I fundamentally have always supported the workers' right to organize and argue for higher wages and better benefits and working conditions. Full stop, with no qualifications. Act 10 is unconstitutional on its face. Full stop. No qualifications. Public sector unions are not perfectly analogous to private sector unions. And writ large, what I want for workers are compensation and benefit systems that reward extraordinary performance, as well as tenure and loyalty to the company, business, or governmental jurisdiction, but that compensation and benefit systems that are fair. That's what workers want. That's what workers deserve. And by the way, the systems as we have them structured now aren't particularly fair. I could do a whole show again on tax policy. We screw workers and reward the wealthy. We tax wealth different than we tax work. All of that is stupid. But let's take our last caller on this, and then I'd like to talk about how we're going to evaluate the Trump 2.0 term. Jeffrey from Madison, you're going to have the last word on Act 10, sir. Go for it.
Good afternoon. Well, I was a public employee. I worked for the city of Madison for 34 years, and Act 10 cost me $42,000.
Yep.
Now, the reason the public employees can't go on strike is because in 1977, the Madison school teachers went on strike, and I forget how long they were out. But because of that, the state of Wisconsin passed a law that says public employees cannot strike.
Nope.
So what effectively happened with Act 10 is not only can we not strike, but now we can't bargain for working conditions and benefits. So they basically turn public employees into second-class citizens.
Yes. I couldn't agree with you more, Jeffrey. It's why I opposed Act 10 then. It's why I oppose it now. There are better ways to address public governmental funding and how we operate our compensation systems other than through what was an absolute axe, otherwise known as Act 10, a scalpel. And other much more nuanced approaches to these things would have been very, very appropriate and much more called for at that time. Here's the interesting wrinkle, folks. Watch this space. Everybody knows that, you know, the state had to renegotiate and reset shared revenue formulas and had to greenlight finally some sales tax revenue for the city of Milwaukee and Milwaukee County. Well, as part of that deal, every single employee starting in 2024 is now part of the state WRS retirement system. So how the heck is that going to work if all of these bargaining rights come back? You know, watch this space. A lot still to come. There will be appeals. We will continue to report out on this. Again, I want to be extraordinarily clear. One of the things that bothered me the most was the fact that the single largest cost driver for the city of Milwaukee, and to a lesser extent Milwaukee County, but a huge cost driver, were police and fire pension costs. So please doubt any justification that relies on, well, we save taxpayers money. Because they didn't touch the pensions and benefits that are the largest cost drivers. Okay? So was there bloated pension benefits that came about through the pension scandal that Tom Ament ushered in? And then, oh, by the way, Scott Walker did nothing to solve in Milwaukee County. Yeah, they sure did. Right? But the idea that Scott Walker would then disempower all public unions except for police and fire, who are the largest cost drivers in the largest jurisdictions, their benefits are. It just makes no sense. None of it holds true. But I wanted to introduce a new topic. Thank you all for your incredible participation today, the criticisms, the questions, the feedback. I think we can all admit that Wisconsinites deserve better than Act 10, and we certainly deserve better than politicians lying to us about what it means. This stuff is very complicated. Speaking of which, I have been really curious about how the heck MAGA voters are going to judge whether or not Trump 2.0 is successful, right? Because, like, here's what Trump got done in 1.0. He made abortion illegal, and he gave tax cuts to billionaires and the largest, most profitable by billions and billions and trillions of dollars, corporations. That's what Donald Trump got done. You might have thought you got a little check with Donald Trump's name on it, but that check came at the expense of you continuing to have your pocket picked to fund larger tax breaks for 100 millionaires and billionaires and companies like Amazon. Okay? So, if you're a MAGA voter out there, how will you judge whether or not Donald Trump is successful? Okay? I would like to know, what are those metrics? Like, what are you looking for? And by the way, Donald Trump's approval rating when he left the White House was like 34%. Maybe that's because, you know, he screwed up the COVID response. One thing I will say did good on, well, with COVID is that vaccine actually got developed really quickly. Donald Trump did that, even though he's now appointed an anti-vaxxer, RFK. But then he proceeded to lie to the American public. It's interesting. This is just another random thought. It's interesting to me how Republicans are so offended by Joe Biden's lie about the pardon for Hunter. And I think Joe Biden should have never said anything, or when he issued the pardon should have said, I changed my mind, and very clearly owned it. But Donald Trump got on stage almost on a daily basis during COVID and lied and made up stuff that cost Americans lives. Like, you know, shine a little light on it. Maybe a little bleach will clear it out. I mean, again, remember the rubric. When confronted with a lie, we need to assess impact and purpose, the acuity of the lie, and the result. By any measure, Joe Biden's lie about the pardon for Hunter Biden impacts Joe Biden's legacy, Hunter Biden's future, but not much else other than the dangerous precedent it sets, potentially. Donald Trump's daily lies have divided Americans and cost tens of thousands of Americans' lives during COVID. RFK's lies have cost people's lives, right? Like, this is the problem. We need to judge the impact of these things. So here are my questions. Again, first administration, I'm going to build the wall and Mexico's going to pay for it. Mexico didn't pay for it and the wall was never finished. Portions of it were started. There is a little bit more wall now, but there's no completed wall. So failure there. What does success look like when it comes to mass deportation, CJ? One of my favorite conservative callers, CJ, what does success look like when Donald Trump says mass deportations? Like, how many millions is enough? Do you have a number in mind?
One here illegally is too many.
So do you deport all people that are here illegally, and how do you do it? How many is enough? Is it all of them? Is it 100%?
Well, remember, your candidate said that the wall was racist and then all of a sudden believed that she should build more.
But CJ, she didn't win. I'm asking you how you're going to assess Donald Trump's promise for mass deportations. What's the number where he can declare that this is a success? Some have said 12 million. Some have said 10. I've heard 20 million. Is 1 million enough? How many? What's the metric for success?
Well, I think again, you want to quantify it. Let's quantify it by the number of terrorists on the terrorist watch list that came under your candidate and your
CJ, president. Do you understand why I get frustrated? I'm whatever you say so that we can move the... See, I'm putting you in a box because I'm trying to talk about Donald Trump's next administration. Okay, so I'm going to repeat the rules to you, CJ, of debating with Maggie Dawn. Do not deflect off the issue that we're actually talking about by a bunch of whataboutisms. That is not the rules of debate. You can look up high school debate rules. You can't deflect off the topic. The topic is, how are we going to measure success for Donald Trump's promise to deport everybody who's here illegally? What's the metric? That's what I want to talk about. That's what I'm asking you, CJ. What is the metric for success?
I think we'll find out, won't we? Because
what does that mean, CJ?
Again,
do you like what does we'll find out mean? Okay, then tell me how we're going to judge it when he does take office, CJ. What's the metric?
I think, well, Maggie, we've already seen some success. There's already been a caravan disbanded. Mexico is going to start enforcing it.
That's called stopping people coming here. I am talking about his promise of mass deportations. How do we know whether or not he has succeeded in fulfilling his promise?
We're going to enforce the law finally, Maggie.
Okay, he has said, CJ, can you just, he has said the words deportation. He said the words mass deportations. Everybody stood at his rallies and held the signs. I'm asking you, what is success when it comes to mass deportations? Is it 1 million? Is it two?
It's one. One person deported.
Well, great. I'm so glad that we got that solved, because guess who deported more people than the Republican president right before him? Obama did. Joe Biden has deported people. So that's success. CJ, does it make any sense to you why it's actually important? So let's start with them. Is success just getting rid of the 500? Is that when Donald Trump goes, yep, I did it, we're good?
I think success has already happened because the...
Okay, you told me 30 seconds ago he hasn't taken office yet, and now you're saying he's already successful, but we haven't yet seen the mass deportations. Okay, we'll try Charles from Wisconsin. What do you have to say, sir?
Oh, Maggie, my blood pressure is up just listening to him dance and... cannot answer any questions. CJ is the only person I've heard talk about this caravan that was coming. And when they found out that Trump was going to be president again, they said, oh, we better turn and go back home.
Yeah.
I swear. But Maggie, wait, so you're telling me that Donald Trump in his first term never got the health care bill passed?
Yeah, weird. He didn't repeal the ACA. Funny, huh? He didn't have a plan to replace. Nope.
No, wait. What about infrastructure? He always says he's a builder. That infrastructure bill didn't get passed under Trump. I thought it got passed under Trump and not Joe Biden.
Nope. Sure didn't, Charles. Every week was infrastructure week under Donald Trump, and yet no infrastructure bill. Y'all, if you are on the line, stay there. I want to know, what's the metric for success for Trump 2.0? CJ doesn't know the answer. Basically, anything Donald Trump says, it's going to be success. This is a slippery slope that should never be okay. We should be measuring all this stuff. I'm Maggie Dawn. Keep it locked. Last segment of the day coming up next, y'all, right here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
That's what I say I'm coming home.
Something's wrong.
The road is long, baby, now.
What do either ride or phone?
I'm coming home and never more to roam.
Baby, tell me you're...
Baby, I'm for sure coming home. I'm coming home.
Locally grown radio, WFHR.
Hey Badger fans, Wisconsin Men's Hockey is hosting the 7th annual Teddy Toss presented by BMO on Friday, December 6th. They'll face off against Michigan State. Be part of our holiday tradition by bringing a new teddy bear to throw on the ice in support of Toys for Tots. So don't miss out on a fun-filled weekend at the Kohl Center. For more information on the Badger Men's Hockey Teddy Toss presented by BMO and to purchase your tickets, visit uwbadgers.com or call 1-800-GO-BADGERS. That's uwbadgers.com or 1-800-GO-BADGERS.
Civic Media, Wisconsin's source for real news and great conversation, offers podcasts of all of our daily shows online and on demand. Simply go to civicmedia.us, click on Daily Shows, and choose the podcast that you want to download. Shows are updated daily, or you can save them and listen all at once. Our podcasts are sponsored by UW Organ and Tissue Donation. You are an organ donor, right? Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. Learn more at heroicdeed.com.
Do you know or work with kids who have special healthcare needs? Help them live their best lives. Contact Wisconsin Wayfinder Children's Resource Network. Our specialists will connect you with services in your area. Wisconsin Wayfinder is free and confidential. Call 877-947-2929 or visit dhs.wi.gov/WISCWAY. Connect today. Sponsored by the Wisconsin Department of Health Services.
Are you ever questioning when life will slow down? Are you ever thinking of just relaxing and enjoying the simple things? All of this is possible, even while still being in the workforce. Worthington, Minnesota is a town growing, yet it's nothing like metro life. Professional and labor jobs, a beautiful lake, bike trails, recreation, acres of public hunting, festivals, and great people. Slow down. We're just a short drive away. So come join us. Worthington, it's worth a look.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR, home for Up North News Radio.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show. You want to get in on this last segment, 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. I'm going to bring back CJ in just a minute, but I'm going to remind everybody, if you want to debate me, there are three rules. Do not deflect off the questions or topic that is at hand, because if we do that, we just end up running around in circles and we're not actually talking about the same thing. The second one is, again, don't disinform. And the third one is try not to disrespect or basically discriminate by grouping people by identity characteristics. I had another question for you, CJ, about the mass deportations. And that is, what if they round people up and they end up deporting actual citizens? Would that make it a failure, or is that a cost of doing business here? What do you think? CJ, you there? Hey, CJ, are you there? Okay, I guess CJ's not there. If he rejoins, we'll maybe try to bring him back. My question to everybody is, listen, Trump has promised mass deportations. I've got a twofold question, like, how many? Right? And the second question is, if while they are engaging in the deportations, they actually end up deporting a U.S. citizen, you know, is that a problem? What do you think, CJ? Is that okay, or is it just a cost of doing business?
Could you repeat the question?
Oh, sure,
again?
Sure. My question is, if while they're deporting people, they end up... Because say someone's name is like Raul Sanchez, right? And there's 50 Raul Sanchez's and they pick up the wrong one and fly the wrong one to Colombia. And the Raul Sanchez that they picked up is a citizen. And let's say this happens a lot. Is that a problem? Do you care? Or is that just the cost of doing business?
No, certainly I do. And I thought the Biden-Harris administration did a wonderful job vetting, right? Yeah. I mean, they aren't even required. They're flying them all over the country. That was Lake and Riley's killer was flown.
Who's now been convicted.
Without even an ID.
Okay. CJ.
Is that not a fact, Maggie? That's a
CJ,
fact, right?
I think it is an absolute failure. It is a failure of our systems when people that have...
No, it's a failure of the Biden-Harris administration.
You don't think...
It's not a failure
CJ,
of the system.
CJ, do you really think that criminals didn't enter while Donald Trump illegally entered this country while Donald Trump was president? Do you really think that not a single person who came here illegally committed more crimes here during Donald Trump's term? Do you think the system itself also needs reform?
They could enforce, he could reinstate the laws today that he executive ordered away.
That's not how executive orders work, CJ. An executive order cannot override existing enacted law. That's not true.
91 executive orders from Biden.
Yeah, do you know how many Donald Trump signed? Do you know how many? My point, CJ, is an executive order cannot overrule existing law. That's not how they work. Executive orders can deal with and dispatch executive branch agency within the legal structures that already exist. They cannot override existing law. No, sir.
I told you about Lakin Riley's murderer. Did the Biden-Harris administration...
CJ, I want to talk about the future. Can we talk about the future? Yes. I'll concede all of the points that you want to make about Lakin Riley. But my question is, how are the mass deportations going to be executed in a way that is successful by whatever metric you're going to use and yet avoids actually deporting citizens and people who are here legally and who are protected by our Constitution? How is that going to work? How are we going to know it's a success?
If they deport one illegal, that's a success.
Okay, well, then Obama was a success, and so was Joe Biden. That ain't the standard, CJ. You just told me all the reasons why it's not. And it can't be the standard that one illegal person or person who is not legally here commits a crime here, because there were people who did that under Donald Trump, so that's not the standard. That's bogus. What is the actual standard?
You've heard Trump state and his administrations and candidates say they're going to go after the most dangerous right off the bat.
How many?
Find them, and they're going to deport them.
How are they going to find them? How are they going to find them?
It shouldn't be an issue, should it, with the Biden-Harris? They did such a great job.
CJ, for crying out loud, let's concede all of the failures of the Biden administration. Abject failure. Tell me how you're going to find the most dangerous people that are here illegally. How are you going to do it?
Well, I'm going to keep ISIS intact. That's something your candidate wanted to disband. And you know what? They're going
Donald Trump won the election, CJ. That's why we're talking about the Trump administration, my friend. Not getting anywhere there on the deportation. I'm going to change the topic, CJ. CJ, can I change the topic? I'm going to change the topic because we're not making any progress. Let's talk about inflation, CJ.
How
do we know? CJ, are you going to play ball with me or do I have to drop you? Because you and I aren't making any inroads on the deportation question. I want to ask you a question about inflation. I want to ask you, okay, well, that's not going to, never mind. I tried, y'all, I did. Inflation. My question to all of you is, how will Donald Trump's success be judged? If inflation goes up, is he a failure? We'll keep discussing this, y'all. I'm Maggie Dawn. I got a jet, but I'll be here for overtime with Dom Salvia. That's up next. Remember, I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me. But it's always better when we stand together, even with CJ, my friend. Y'all take care.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR, Rapids' home of Nightlight with Peach Wabba.
Todd Albaugh.
Hey, everybody, join us next time as our old friends Pat Kreitlow of Up North News Radio and Trigby Olson, senior advisor at the Lincoln Project, join us. Be here.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays noon till 2. Join our advertising family on WFHR WIRI and see how radio can help improve awareness, revenue, and staffing for your business. I'm Ashley, and it's my mission to help our area businesses thrive. Call me today, 715-496-0710.
Join the conversation with your favorite hosts or shows anytime. Find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Share your thoughts on our social media channels wherever you are, whenever you want. The Civic Media Network of local radio stations here for you.